third to talk about the area of social concerns and justice. Feel free at any time to toss in your ideas. I've got kind of a starter person in each area, and then I would like any of you to come and feel free to share things out of your church or to ask questions of anybody who is talking about the particular programs that they are doing. I'd like to start with worship and invite Tom to share some things about what they have been doing in the congregation in Rush City, Minnesota.
Well, Harvey first mentioned this thing. I guess I was, what I said, that our main concern the last couple of years is, I suppose, as many of us have been getting used to the LDW or learning it. When I compare notes around our district and other areas, it seems to me like we've had a really good experience. Although I was talking to somebody today, and one of the people with us was sitting next to me. He says, well, he's on the council now. He says, if I'd been on the council, I would have voted against buying the book. So I don't know what that proves. But we are, for our congregation, well into the third of the settings for us. In other words, we have learned two of them, and I'm now learning the last one. We started with the second, then went to the third, and now the first. Part of that grew out of the fact that with the Red Book, we had a tradition of using both settings in the course of the year. And some people expressed a little fear that if we changed books, we would lose that sense of variety. And so we've maintained that both by using the various options and then by using all the settings. Original intention was to key the settings to the lectionary years. This is the year of Matthew, year A, this was the first. We were in year B when we started it. So we started with the second setting. It also happened to seem to be one of the easiest to learn to start with. When we started out, we did not just hand it to everybody and say, here we go, this week we're going to start using the Green Book. We began with a series of workshops each month in which we introduced the things that would be coming during the month. We learned one or two elements of the service each month or so and added to it. It's the same way we've gone into each of the next settings. We start in Advent, we follow some of the rubrics which suggest the leading out, like the hymn of praise or whatever during Advent, and gradually move into the different parts of the service. We did so well originally that we got kind of overconfident with some of the hymns and started learning new hymns a little too fast. And then we had some rumblings. And part of that was the fact that to get acquainted with a hymnal, if you've ever been in a position of choosing hymns, to suddenly be confronted with 500 new, you tend to have only so much time to learn what is where. But I finally went through there, pulled out what I've come to call the Dirty Dozen, about 12 very, very familiar hymns, ones that everybody's going to love, and or nearly everybody's going to love, and make sure that we use at least one of those each Sunday, some Sundays two, and so we repeat them two in a quarterly or so. And that has helped. And then one that we really want to learn, we spend at least a month, maybe a full season. On Easter, we just finished the baptismal hymn. We know that Christ is raised. Fits beautifully with what Dan's been teaching us this week. By the time we got done with it, the last Sunday, we had a choir there the last Sunday of Easter. And you couldn't tell the difference. Congregation just picked up on it. We've had great fun with our choirs and with processions on special occasions. We use large number of banners and things like that in the processions. At Easter, all three choirs at least were at the beginning of each service and had the kids, part of some of the kids with banners interspersed throughout with all the others, and really took advantage of all the options, pulled out all the stops that are in the book for Easter. I guess the big thing is just to take advantage of the variety. We have never gotten into a rut. We won't allow people to get into a rut in the congregation. And most of them appreciate that very much. We change ourselves. Although the biggest problem is that we don't always get the favorites often enough. There are some who would sing "The Worthy is Christ" every Sunday if we would, but save that for the special occasions. There's a beautiful Lenten hymn in there that begins with a single line that works beautifully for the Kyrie, you know, "God the Father in heaven, have mercy on us." The soul voice sings, and the congregation picks up on it. I can't remember the number of it, but it's, if you've never tried it in your congregation, try it sometime in Lent. We've had even things where a solo voice is interspersed in the congregation with sing that out. It's a real thrill. We also have had a real exciting thing with the use of readers. Just put up a sign-up sheet, kind of like we do around here. And we've had people from grandparents to sixth graders reading the lessons. And we're not quite so able to do that with the sung parts, but we get people to do that every once in a while. And then try to provide extra times when the children do things, the high school people do things in the services. I guess part of that was formulated here with the children's vespers and musical vespers and so on. If we meet here daily at vespers, it seems to me like the local congregation meets weekly in worship. And it seems like the different parts of the community should be given responsibility for taking part in things. And in fact, I'm going home now trying to figure out how we can expand that this week.
Any questions to Tom? Are there any other sharings about the area of worship? Ideas that have been good ones for you in your church? You must have been doing interesting stuff in East Lansing.
Well, we had a trumpet every other Sunday about playing desk camps and parodies and things. So that went over real well. Made the trumpeter real popular.
Can you hire yourself out for the next year? You could travel in the country. Okay.
Well, one other thing I did in East Lansing that went over real well is writing the prayer of the church for each Sunday. I've heard it said many times that as much time should be put into the prayer of the church as is put into the sermon, which I think a lot of people would disagree with, but I agree with that. A well-thought-out prayer of the church that it really encompasses and draws in all of the specific needs of the people, the needs of people outside of the church, outside of the parish, thanksgivings, world events, politics.
Who did it? Who?
I did. But anybody could do it. Just if, having a basic form of the church is the first talk, praying about the church as a whole, and then what comes next? There's a five part of the church, the nations, the world and nations, the sick, the poor, the oppressed. The saints of the church, and then the local parish. If you include those five things, and then what I like the way the LBW changes it to, they call it the prayers, but what they don't call it is the general prayer, because it should really be the specific prayer. And by having as many specifics as possible there, I think it really brings the service down to earth.
Along the line of prayer, we've started something to get the people praying for each other. We call it our Pray for One Another table. In the narthex, we just have a card table with 3x5 cards, one for each family or individual household with specific names on it. And then each Sunday, every worshiper picks up a card. They're all face down. just pick up a card at random and take it for the week and pray especially for those people or that person during the week. Next Sunday, bring it back, take another one. So everyone in the congregation is praying and being prayed for. And that's been something that's, I think, been a good venture.
Others sharing, just pop right in. Yep.
In our church, we were fortunate enough to have some memorial funds, so they purchased a set of bells, and you use those with processionals, and you get more people involved doing the bells, but you get those, and work goes into your processionals and into your service, too. It works very nice.
Neighboring congregation of ours has that, and so that's for people who can't sing, feel like they can have a part to listen to the church. They enjoy it.
Heard a story of the wife of one of the United Methodist pastors in a suburb of Minneapolis, in one of the churches there, got so disgusted. There was a person who was in the bell choir. They had just gotten the bells, and they had to rush before they were going to use them for one of the Christmas services. And the one woman was so far off on her bell playing that two of the other people in the bell choir got so mad and so embarrassed during the first time they were doing something that they just walked off, and the whole thing was thrown out of kilter. By the next Christmas, they had it set. Other things, yeah.
We've been very fortunate in having a fellow who sings and has been singing with the Seattle Opera. And he has been doing liturgy, and which also means that he is standing up in front, and his voice certainly helps with the congregational singing. Because of the acoustics in our church, the people in the back can't hear each other sing, but when he sings from the front with his long voice, tremendous voice, it really helps push up the congregational singing.
Yeah, that raises a point that I think a lot of people maybe are shy about, but if you can do some leadership things, there are two or three people that we can depend on in our congregation to lead the standing. And you know how much I appreciate that, really. They're brave enough to stand up when the time comes to stand instead of sitting around waiting for everybody else to do it. And that's helpful, it really is. You'd be surprised, just little things like that. Somebody singing too, that helps.
For those of you who have just arrived, we're just sharing some positive things that are happening within congregations, and the general area we're discussing now is worship. Go from worship then to enabling and discipleship, and then finishing with social concerns. Any other sharing of ideas on worship, of things from your church?
This is an original with me, but Jerry Evenry from the ALC on the Mons Teague were coaching us in some chancel design work, because our chancel area at the present time is very multi-purpose and doesn't have any permanent fixtures, and we have been debating about what to put in there. And they simply said, less is more. As soon as you put something permanent in, that's it forever. You can't change it. And so they said to think seasonally, and we began to do that. And we've contacted people from the congregation to design a Lenten cross, an Easter cross, an Advent cross, a Christmas cross that's processed in and put in a socket on any place up in the sanctuary, along with many other things, including the railing. When we were refurbishing or redesigning, we didn't put the railing back in, and our congregation stood in a circle around the altar instead of the traditional stance, and we got to like that. And yet we are still deciding what to do with the altar railing and so forth. So they said, well, how does your congregation like to stand? And we said, well, it's very joyful and to face one another. They said, well, for goodness sakes, then stand for Easter, but kneel for Lent. So now we're going to go seasonal with kneeling and so forth. I think it's exciting because the church would be rather dressed down before the service, and the processional entrance hymn and so forth, that becomes dressed up as we carry things in.
Jeff?
It reminds me of something that we did that, I don't know where the idea came from during the Advent. During Christmas time, we always have our churches decorated to the full, and during Advent, we made sure all the banners were taken down, but what we put up was bare trees, just in the back of the chancel with blue lights on it. And so during the Advent season, people begin to see barren silhouettes, and kind of served as a mystique. And so when Christmas came, the drama changed and the scenery changed. It was really a neat thing. So just two bare branches, trees, and blue lights on it before Christmas really helps prepare for Christmas.
Other ideas on worship is fine.
The thing about standing for Easter is all the way back to the Council of Nicaea. In addition to adopting the Nicene Creed, they did some regulations for the church. And one of them was that the proper position for prayer in Easter is standing, as an indication that we are risen with Christ. Back on the prayer thing, St. John's Church in Summit, New Jersey, and I don't know, maybe others do this, but I heard it from the man who was the pastor there once, I've heard it several times, used to, I think, have a daily prayer session. Thank you, man. Could be done weekly.
Just a second, you've got orders here.
Where they divided the congregation up, and I don't know how many families it would take each day, one or several of the families were remembered. And then they were sent a card before that day was come up, and that on such and such a day, at the prayer time, their family and their family's concerns would be included in the prayers, and inviting them to be there, if at all possible, or someone from their family to participate in that prayer thing. And it's an idea that I've been really wanting to try, haven't tried it yet. But it seems to me like a beautiful kind of thing for a congregation. Mm-hmm.
Are there any persons who have books that you would recommend that you have read that concern worship or the prayer life of the congregation that you would highly recommend to anyone else? Or any song books, supplementary books, or books for youth singing, anything in that vein.
I got more information on those little songs we were singing last Saturday afternoon.
I think from talking with Pat Hayden that I don't know if it's the Holden Press or something is going to be coming out with that, and that those songs have been kind of a trial run here. This is kind of a testing ground for them, and that hopefully at Holden next year, if not then church-wide, there will be an international children's song book coming out for the church. That was kind of a testing.
Those are really good.
Any books dealing with worship or prayer?
There's a book by Silvick called The Architecture for Worship. That's rather nice in terms of design. I think that's available through Augsburg and other places. I've seen it here too at the St. Olaf College. Worship Blueprints, are you acquainted with those?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're nice to them.
Excellent.
Yeah, Steve Cornelius, who wrote the one for Easter, is here this week over to Wednesday Sings in the Choir from the Center. Did a good job.
Steve's not here. I was hoping he'd be here. Should I go ahead?
I forgot the name of it now. I just got it before we left. One of my organists gave it to me for a gift. The commentary on all the hymns in the LBW just came out.
Yes, brand new.
I forgot the name of it. But I think that would be valuable even to the... It's key to the LBW, but anybody who would want the backgrounds on the hymns and so on. Take something. It's expensive. $22.
Yeah.
That's why I said beautiful organist she bought it for me.
If you're interested in the theology of worship, there's a book by Paul Hoon called The Integrity of Worship. It goes pretty deep into some things. It's helpful if you have the time and energy to plow through it.
Paul Hoon.
Right.
The Integrity of Worship.
The Chorister Guild magazine has a lot of good worship ideas in it. It's advised mainly of children's choir magazines. Anybody get that? But it really has a lot of terrific worship ideas in there. From Texas. I don't know who publishes it really. It's just out of the Chorister's Guild. Chorister's Guild, yeah.
John Elbersacher has a brand new thing called Kindermass, which is very familiar tunes, Christmas and Easter tunes, and it's set especially for children, elementary age, and it's an entire church worship service, including Holy Communion, so it follows the whole format. And it's extremely singable. You can do it hardly without any practice. And that's kind of scratched out on a piece of paper right now. If you write to John Elbersacher, he'll send you a copy, and you can copy it from his, he said.
Is it going to be printed?
He does strange things. I'm not sure.
Kindermass.
M-E-S-S-E. Does anybody know how to get a hold of him?
That's a good question.
It's a good question. Somebody ought to know.
Is he in the Twin Cities?
Yes.
Yet? Or?
We work in all the bookstores. He calls in.
Yeah. Put some notes around.
He calls in.
I'd like to open up a bit on sharing ideas under a general title of enabling, that would talk about some discipleship action within the church. And I'd ask Jim from Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Milwaukee to talk a bit about some of the things that they have been doing that way. Any of the rest of you are invited to come and join the circle. It would make it much easier here to do a circle. We'll add this before this eventually goes out. Okay. Jim Cocker.
Yeah, Harvey. I heard Dan say yesterday at the Bible study about baptism takes seriously the idea of inclusion, which means that by baptism, all of us are ordained into the ministry. And the parish that I serve was... had three pastors who were mavericks in the 67 who took seriously that little idea in a cathedral metropolitan church, decided that when the senior pastor left that they'd like to invite someone like Bill Weber in and Lauren Albertson. And after a retreat of the leadership and a year with some leaders, they began to decide that the ministry belonged to everybody. And that the clergy were accountable for was one primary responsibility of equipping the people. And what came out of that is a team ministry that has been nothing short of an avalanche, in which today the ministry has the people who coordinate and are skilled in goals and objectives each year to write ministries that they're going to achieve and evaluate what they're doing. But the key to it, and out of that spin in that year began an idea that the neighborhood was changing. And with the neighborhood changing and big homes being filled with minority people and poor people and God's unique people and mentally retarded people and Hispanic people and Indian people and retired people and the wealthy had left the city. It meant that a ministry had to change, and it was not a ministry, a monolithic ministry, or a ministry created, controlled by a small group could not take care of this ministry. And so out of that came a ministry known as the Next Door Ministry, which was one of the big parsonages, became the Next Door House, which now is, as it has avalanched to a staff of 31 people out of it has come a Cibola urban semester, internship program, urban internship program, a Genesis program for outpatient counseling for drug addiction, and a holistic health care center has come out of it. I mean, just it's gone on and on by people who just got turned on, and our community ministries have become larger than the parish. But each year, the people know that they have the power, and they can make the decisions. And we have a manual, at which my job as administrative pastor is to make sure that everyone has the key to making getting things done if they want to do it. My job is the staff's job is to facilitate that the ministry is theirs. And it's been absolutely fantastic in the area of worship ministry, social concerns ministry, life and growth ministry, and educational ministry. Those are the four primary ministries. Presently, two things that I think that are really neat that we're working on and are happening is one that lay people are given scholarships by the church to go away. Why should the clergy just be given scholarships to go away and learn about the faith? But we have monies available for our people to go away and be equipped to do the ministry, and that's really a neat thing. And the trouble is everyone's applying for that money and go here and there. But the point is we're saying we take seriously that if we want to support the pastoral leadership, we must support the lay leadership. But we're putting together a job description for a volunteer coordinator, because in the course of the week there must be about 55 people just working in the church doing ministry. And so it came out of an idea of three persons along with some leadership that said that all of us are ministers. And therefore all of us are, everyone in leadership is equipped in communication skills. And as a way of, it doesn't, so that we don't have power plays going on. But it is going to, last year, let's see, with the Reagan administration and the number of people who need food, the church is filled daily with people who need food. So someone got an idea about how can we do this? And so using St. Olaf students and urban semester leading, things just began to happen. And the whole city started having communion services where they bring bread and food and they're funneled down to the church in the course of the week. It's not uncommon to have 300-400 people come through the church getting food and going through a budget class and trying to then get in working with VISTA workers. And it just goes on and on and on. And the point is, there are two styles of ministry. One is that it's a top-down. The other one is that you allow it to happen and say that the Spirit is there, but yet try to communicate. So it's a church that's gotten smaller, but it's gotten terribly big. So that's enabling people. But it began with a baptismal assumption that all are ministers.
Questions to Jim.
Is your manual that you mentioned, is that available?
Yes. If you ask me, give me your name, I'll send it to you. Everybody has a job description so that they know what they to do, and which even includes volunteers.
How many paid staff?
Paid staff at the church, full-time part-time is 14. The ministry that we started next door is now 31. And that's, but that's in, that's independent, but it would, but we, most of our people give the leadership to it.
You're not making any kind of requirements on your members to take part in any of these things.
No, no.
I mean, I'm sure it's some of these congregations where you want a person to be a member is going to be doing so many hours of volunteer work or something else.
I didn't understand what you said. The clergy have all communication skills to avoid power plays. I didn't understand what you said.
All people are trained in, we use the, I don't know how many are familiar with the Minnesota Couples Communication Program that is used for couples, but we use it in leadership's training of council members and pastors. So that there's a full awareness of self and full awareness of communicating intentions, and, so that we have the same method of communications, and that's been very helpful for staff.
So that everybody can feel assertive some of the time. Okay. Other questions to Jim before we are you open so that if somebody wants to nail you at the end of this session, have you got a little while or free to make some time to get together on that? Very creative sense of laity doing ministry. Excellent.
Well, we live in a sort of a bedroom community where so many of our people commute and spend maybe 2 hours on the freeway. So we've started a tape library where they can listen to tapes to and from work, and most of them are our home and village tapes.
Ruins my night.
No. But there is a problem of educating the laity in our church because it's small and we don't have the funds to have great big educational programs. And this is one inexpensive way of helping to educate those who do not have the time to come to evening things because they don't get home until 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock.
Good idea.
And it isn't just Holden Village tapes. We have, everybody is contributing. If they attend a lecture or something they feel is worthwhile and of interest to the congregation, they add that tape to the library.
Other ideas? Things that fall into the general area of enabling.
Sure, one, I suppose it could be in the area of social justice as easily, but in connection with enabling it, I work with a group of parishes, and the function is to attempt to enable ministry jointly by the priests, the laity of these parishes in Kansas City. One of the things we do is similar to what Jim was saying. We have an emergency food pantry, and always short on resources, so demand far exceeding the supply. Calling together some of the laity in our parishes who are associated with the food industry, either in warehousing or processing or in retailing, wholesaling, and did so, called together a small little luncheon, informal luncheon meeting, and said, we got this problem that there are so many people in the city who need food assistance, you know, a lack of resources, even though the churches are pretty generous in contributing, bringing food to communion Sundays and then bringing it to the pantries and the centers. So they came up with the idea that there's a lot of food wasted in the food industry itself. And a great deal of food wasted in the food industry. Because of economics. For example, if a can of food, if they're packaging peas and somebody pushes the wrong button and you end up with green beans labeled on it, they don't go back and change the labels. That food is usually just dumped. This is one illustration. And out of that emerged a program called Harvesters, which is a food salvage network. And there's a number of these around in other parts of the city, another country now. And ours was not the first. Phoenix is one of the first ones. But it's been very successful and really was the brainchild of a small group of lay members who were being asked to contribute at the point of their expertise, as they already involved in food. And that organization now is collecting from the food industry over £1 million of food a year and distributing to emergency food centers throughout the metropolitan area.
Would you have access, if anybody wanted to just stop and get your address,
sure.
Would you be able, your church, to send that out to people who might be interested in getting some written information on that? Any questions to Luther about that?
I guess that I just to underline that I think what's important for this sharing the germ of the idea is not that particular illustration, but to ask people to contribute at the point of their expertise. We often don't do that.
Other ideas that anyone has on things that have been very good in terms of, the discipleship, discipling process in your congregation? Nikki?
I would have to say that we have a fairly small congregation of about 300 members, and out of that we have 165 adults that meet in small groups every 2 weeks, and that it's the model that was spoken about by Dan this morning, the Koinonia model, huh? And they meet for a year with the senior pastor in groups of 15, and at the end of that, they choose that is a time in which they learn to minister to each other. They learn some TA type things just to have a common basis for analyzing themselves and beginning to understand how people operate. And they do some verbatims, which are like hospital visits. And they look at those and just talk about what kind of ministry is going on in this situation and how would they feel if they were the patient or if they were the person that had come in to visit, and just begin to pick up some skills on listening and sharing. And then at the end of the year, they can become a koinonia of usually around 15. And the leaders rotate every year, and that leader will meet the opposite week with the other leaders in the church, and they will do a Bible study together, and that becomes the basis for their program if they choose to use it in whatever way they choose to use it. But within 2 weeks, it's amazing the amount of information that can be handed out to 165 adults or collected from them through this network of small groups that are meeting. And you never walk in the church that you don't get a feeling that people really care, because there's so many little, there's just such a network of people that really do know a lot about each other and really care for each other. And we have chosen to do that and do not have like women's groups or men's groups. That's really the structure in which our whole church is set up. The youth group has almost become its own koinonia group, has a little more moving in and out than the other groups. But it's just the model of our church. And it's a very, it's a church that really shows a lot of loving and caring, and it's been a very healthy model, I think. We're in a changing community, and it's a very good model for new people coming in, because they get into a small group and feel part of that very quickly. And when you're dealing with racial change, I think that it's very helpful to be able to have small groups of people that get to know each other and can do sharing.
Is there a book that is a national model or for people to look at? Yes,
but I don't know the name of it. Okay.
Jim?
I wanted to share another idea before I...
Go ahead.
What she's talking about, this caring ministry, I think that's the key to lay ministry. And sometimes it doesn't happen unless it happens out of necessity. But we served in a community where we have 120 shut-ins and 27 hospitals to cover. And out of that, what's happened through this lay ministry is that that every hospital is, we have our diaconate that both serve as assisting ministers, communion servers, and write the prayers, so that when they are leading in worship, they lead in relationship to their ministry. But the hospital caring, I hope most of us do that, but the lay hospital visitation is a phenomenal thing that really helps. And what's really happened for us is that we have expertise in hospital visitation in the area of alcoholism, in the area of heart disease, and in the area of cancer. And we have in those arenas, there are individuals who that we just call Gordy or Gert or somebody, and they are the people to just follow up long-term on people who are terminal with cancer. And they can provide a ministry that we don't have the time to listen as professional staff, but they do. And to have key people in those areas to do pastoral care is something every congregation has.
I would think that almost every congregation, no matter what the size, has had somebody who has dealt with mastectomy, someone who has gone through open heart surgery, or any number of things, and that it is very helpful. Persons will identify who are in the hospital with those individuals who are very grateful for what has happened with them, with their lives, and that they are willing at the drop of a hat to go and minister to others. And there's a real bonding that exists at that point.
We've begun to do that with people with particular types of problems. I had a woman who felt a need for a support group, and I realized that she did. And so I thought, well, who are some people that might have similar problems or who would be supportive? And I was amazed as I started this that the first six people I called said they were very eager to get into something like this. And since then, other problems have emerged and other groups are forming. So other than just illness, you can have people with certain fears, and so you form a group of people that you know who have those kind of similar burdens. So that thing really can go as you direct it. And I give guidelines to a moderator for each group. And the guidelines include a Bible study time, and then directives for sharing, and then prayer time.
A resource book for that is Dan Simonson's book, Faith Under Fire. That's done good to do that, gathering people around a kind of a suffering cause or understanding suffering from a biblical point of view. That's been a help. I just want to share a serendipity on this shut-in thing. My intern and one of our ladies were going around about a year ago And they stopped at two or three people who lived in homes or convalescent hospitals that were quote-unquote shut-ins, and they were out seeing the doctor. Somebody had come and taken them to the doctor. You know, for goodness gracious, if they can go see the doctor, why not bring that same procedure in? And so that's what we started with, about maybe 18 or 20. Once a month coming in for a sunshine communion service on Thursday afternoons. And that's been absolutely delightful. The first time that happened, people just wept because they hadn't seen one another in the congregation for 8-9 years because they couldn't come to a worship service. But they come to an abbreviated communion service and they choose their own hymns, have a hymn sing, and just absolutely love it. There's wheelchairs and crutches and walkers all over the place, and it takes us more time to get into the church than to have a service. And they get out and get across the patio for refreshments. But in a short time, they can have an extremely powerful, meaningful community experience that they've never had before. And I can hardly get through each one of those because it's such a moving experience.
Thank you.
We have become an annual thing where the Sunday school puts on a dinner for the senior citizens and shut-ins. Of course, some of those are people get out of rooms, but many of those are people that have to make a special effort to get there. We're working on it, we don't have the ramps yet, the wheelchairs and some of that, so we have people to help get them down here. It's become quite an exciting thing.
I have a question. Is there anyone here who has used a steel ramp, kind of a collapsible or portable ramp at your churches? Anyone who has that kind of a system for access for handicapped? Okay. What time is it? Is it about 10 to?
9:58.
That late?
Yes.
Go a few more minutes. I was thinking it was at the most 10 to maybe 22. I'll ask Larry if you would share the use of the Schramm's book, what that has meant with your church, and then any ideas on social justice concerns. We'll go maybe about 10, 15 more minutes.
I don't really have too much to say about it other than the fact that we used it in an adult Sunday school class with not terribly great expectations. I figured that we go through the 7 or 8 chapters, whatever it is, in 7 or 8 weeks. And as it turned out, it was a great vehicle for stimulating discussions. And we ended up spending about 3 times as much time as I had anticipated. So we found it a very stimulating book for discussion purposes to get at some of these ideas of peacemaking and global justice and hunger.
Better for you than for some other specific materials that were geared to either the economics or global issues and so on?
Well, for a starting point, yes. Because I don't think our congregation is as terribly aware of those or even think of those types of issues other than what they get in the Sunday sermons and stuff. So it was a very good introduction to that, some of those ideas.
The book, The Things That Make for Peace by John and Mary Schramm is available, probably stacks available here in the bookstore. And serves as a good study book and kind of an introduction book.
They were very much available in the library, first part of the
book. That's right, yeah. That and Born Again, right? By Charles Colson were the books that were left there by Doodle. Other things that have been positive experiences in the area of social concerns or social justice teaching, things that have worked within your congregation that have brought about, raised consciousness or brought about real change?
That wasn't exactly teaching, so We are, like I said, in a racially changing community, and we have joined with 11 Lutheran denominations in our county and are working together on understanding racism and how that is impacting our neighborhoods and the county. And we found some real power in dealing with some county issues. When you get in a changing community, your schools start getting bad publicity. There's redlining that affects neighborhood sales and that kind of thing. And it's been very exciting. Many churches had lost membership, and we're having a lot of just morale problems and everything else. And we've learned that by working together, we've grown a lot, and that in dealing with justice issues, that we may not change the county, but that there's real strength in working together and being in the fight for justice. And it's just been very, very exciting for us. And I don't know, I think we don't do enough of that. We don't pull together. And one of the first things we did was have an all-county youth retreat. And we talked about racism in the schools. And it became very clear that in our county, it's our youth who are really on a day-to-day basis dealing with racism. And it was a wonderful weekend. And the kids grew very close, and they've asked to deal with that more. And very exciting. We've even hired a person who graduated from Gettysburg last year to be in the 11 churches as our, plus some funding from national churches are paying his salary. So it's exciting.
Harvey, a neat thing that's happened with us in the area of racism is that we've tried to take seriously the ERA movement, and we had dartball at Church for Men, and there's softball and bowling, you know, and somehow someone got an idea this summer, why don't we start a league of girls softball? I don't know how many girls, churches of girls softball. It's been the neatest thing that's been going between the churches in Milwaukee this summer with different racially mixed congregations. And the what's happening is just dynamite. And I don't know if it would happen with men playing ball together, but with women playing ball, and it's bringing the people from the churches, that somehow we've gotten our finger on the right thing of bringing people together. And it was softball to help races have fun together.
Other ideas, thank you.
On the infant formula thing, I don't know how many people have seen this doing ball leagues.
Can you hear?
Yeah, I'm sorry, on the infant formula business, if you've seen the film Bottle Babies, it's been shown quite a bit around Minnesota, but I don't know how, because it comes out of Minneapolis. If you see that one, you never even miss these products.
Film Bottle Babies, excellent. For totally agree on that. One of the most powerful films that could be used with any church gathering that you would want to do it.
How long the film is that?
About 45 minutes.
Yeah, no more than that.
In connection with that, I belong to the same church, and we really have gotten into the boycott on the Nestle. I mean, if you're going to do it, you do it all the way. We clip all the Nestle coupons, and they're sent back to the Nestle company saying, we are not buying your products anyway, coupon or not. And we really jumped into the boycott more on that. But if you've ever seen, there are two films on it, and you see either one of them. It's just, and nothing is being done. No matter what we do, nothing is being done.
Except our country.
Right. But the Nestle company is a Swiss-based international company, and they really could care less. But we're still working on it.
sometimes you have to march around Jericho more times. Expect for the course.
Blow up your compass too.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
How does one get hold of that film?
Mary Helen, you wouldn't have to have an address in your pocket, would you?
No.
You know, there's the address.
See,
address
I,
don't
know. I know we ordered it for LCW, but I don't know.
I would think, now I don't know that much about the bureaucratic structure of the Lutheran Church here, but I would guess that there would be out of an office, a central office, a listing of audiovisual resources you could have, and that most of them would have that. If not, I'm sure they would be very glad to put you in touch where you could get that directly. I think that would be the easiest thing. For that, or Last Grave at Dimbaza, or any other excellent films that are a good introduction to a specific issue.
The Division of Life and Mission in the Congregation of the ALC has a toll-free number, and I'm sure that those people know where that film is available.
Did you get that?
I got that.
Okay. Toll free is always fun to call. Maybe time for a couple more comments, and I guess there'll be another session that will be going here on seminary education. But a couple more ideas.
Harvey, while you're raising resource areas, can we use box? Is box 871 Nashville, Tennessee still open? For that's where all the new creative ideas are in the Methodist Church.
Yeah.
Is that still open?
Yep.
Okay. If anybody, that's a neat place. If you want to get ideas for ministries that's non-Lutheran, by box. You know what the address is?
I don't know the zip. That'll get there.
That'll get there. Yeah.
Nashville is half Grand Ole Opry and half United Methodist. Maybe one more sharing you might have of something that would come from social justice areas within you.
Well, make sure you if you want to get things in, if you want to get public issues in front of your congregation, make sure that organizations in your area know that your building is open, because they're always looking for buildings to meet in. Just send out the word, and then you can always be listening in your church calendar that these organizations are having things going on.
Excellent. I would agree with that. Our church has made a turnaround, and it went from a church where the trustees saw it as a place to be protective against the world, until now there are 60 some organizations that meet there on a regular basis, not just that's outside the church organizations, plus any other groups on a waiting list to get there. Out of that group has not only come I think a much greater openness on the part of that community to the church, but a whole raft of people who will come and suddenly show up for worship on Sunday, or bring their kids to the Sunday school, and so on. It's a very good, in a sense, by giving and by opening and by practicing hospitality and risking any kind of biblical word about return on that is there. It's a good biblical practice. Thank you all for coming. I hope for...